You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kevin Jackson. Welcome to this remarkable community that is West Hill. And thank you for deciding to spend this Mother's Day morning here with us. Dale, welcome back. And thank you for sharing your gift of music with us once again. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Building awareness here at West Hill is one of our goals, and we've been doing this for almost 2 years now. We've been, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and relationship with our First Nation sisters and brothers, we've been reading one of the 94 recommendations that were sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We're on recommendation number 88. We call upon all levels of government to take action to ensure long-term Aboriginal athlete development and growth and continued support for the North American Indigenous Games, including funding to host the Games and for provincial and territorial team preparation and travel. In this our time of need.
At this point in the service, Scott usually picks up the microphone and shares some of his perspectives on life, on our personal lives, on life in this community, and on our position in this country and this planet. These are the three G's: grounded, guided, and growing. And this does give us an opportunity to look at why we're here and some of the perspectives of us being interconnected, that there is very little that happens in this community, in this city, in this country, in this world that doesn't impact on others or everybody in some circumstances. And it's looking at these three areas that help us to define a little bit more who we are. So we're grounded in this life. It's the life that we have to live. It's the life that presents us with difficulties, challenges, annoyances, and opportunities. And by looking at these circumstances and sometimes just by expressing them, that helps us to move a little bit forward. For example, what were some of the difficulties that each of us had this week? For myself, standing up here and saying something meaningful was a little bit of a challenge, but bear with me, I may find something useful. So we are grounded in this life. It's the one that we have to live. However, we are guided. We are guided by love. We believe that where there is love, where there is loving care, we have an opportunity to share our encouragement, to roll up our sleeves and do something about it, and to take action. So guided by this love, we have some principles that help us. And we think that we can make a difference. We can be a light out there in times of darkness. Finally, growing. We do have the opportunity here to chat with each other, to hear inspirational messages, and to listen to our own trials and tribulations. And by doing that, we gain the wisdom to help us. So those three G's are an integral part of who we are at Wesley United Church. And it's, pardon me, West Hill. There is a squeal there. That's a long story. I knew that I would make one blunder. It's now done, so now we can get on with it. And you might ask, what is Wesley United Church? And I'll say, it's an area where I learned some leadership skills and had my spiritual journey enhanced. So, grounded, guided, and growing, those are trademarks that we try to do every Sunday, that we might try to do every day when we do have the opportunity. So, with those words, we'll have a musical interlude and then on with the service.
We have a couple of readings today. Many individuals who have made a difference have started not with the head, with getting educated on the facts, but with the heart. Their hearts were sparked, and this in turn ignited their quest for knowledge. This might be someone who entered a forest and suddenly felt the interconnectedness between all life. Or it might be a mother who felt helpless watching her child die as a result of exposure to environmental contamination. Take a deep look inside yourself and explore the possibilities of your untapped passions. In the end, it really doesn't matter whether your motivation comes from the head or the heart, as they are forever intertwined and both are essential for creating change. Offered as wisdom for the journey. When giving is all we have, a poem. One river gives its journey to the next. We give because somebody gave to us. We give because nobody gave to us. We give because giving has changed us. We give because giving could have changed us. We have been better for it. We have been wounded by it. Giving has many faces. It is loud and quiet, big, though small, diamonds in wood nails. Its story is old, the plot worn and the pages too. But we read this book anyway, over and over again. Giving is first and every time, hand to hand, mine to yours, yours to mine. You give me blue, I give you yellow. Together, we are simply green. You give me what you did not have, and I gave you what I had to give. Together, we made something greater from the difference. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
If the world were an easy place to live in, how happily ever after we would all live. But it is not. There is poverty. There is illness. There is tragedy. There is death. We live amongst these things, and yet we call ourselves people of hope. Poverty awaits a creative challenge. Illness awaits a brilliant mind. Tragedy awaits a loving word. Death awaits life's celebration song. May we each find the gift that is ours to give, alongside the courage and strength we need to follow through on our commitments. As light into light, we pray. Amen. Those words were from Greta Vosper. It's now my privilege to introduce my brother Robert, who is bringing the perspective this morning. Robert lives in Toronto, and has quite an extensive biography. The biography would probably almost be as long as his speech if I made it comprehensive. Suffice it to say that he has degrees in business and law, and has practiced law in Canada and the United States, privately and in corporations, and he has lived and worked, and the list is, I think, inclusive: Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, Los Angeles, Houston, New York, London, Detroit, and Frankfurt. He sometimes says that he wasn't able to hold a job. However, I think he's always one seeking challenges and opportunities, and standing in front of you will be one of those for him. Robert has been a supporter of the arts, especially dance, in Toronto with the National Ballet of Canada and other ballet troupes in London and Los Angeles. He's also served on educational boards and charities and hospital boards. He calls himself both philanthropic and an aggressive fundraiser. So if he has to talk privately with you afterwards, be careful. He might just be offering you a position on a board. Currently, besides his daytime job, he is chair of the board of directors of the Canadian Cancer Society, and brought his considerable skills at governance and leadership to transform an organization that was somewhat top-heavy. He is here to speak to us this morning. I invited him to speak, but I can't hold him to this entirely, about volunteerism and philanthropy, about giving back generously and giving both of your time, talents, and financial concerns to those causes that make a difference in our society. So I am pleased and proud to welcome Robert to address us this morning.
So I've taken the headset off, and it's with Judy. We're not going to walk out with it. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You can see that Michael and I have had a sibling rivalry relationship for much of our lives, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to follow your kind words and your performance this morning. And Kevin, that's very much the same with you. This seems to be a spot for talent, and I'm frankly a little nervous because I was not really familiar with this community, and some of the concepts were a little new, shall we say. So that aside, good morning on this glorious and revered Mother's Day Sunday. Michael actually has told me a little bit about the community, and in particular the fact that many of you are on what some refer to as the belief spectrum, the space among conventional God-centered religions across agnosticism right through to atheism. I must also say that as Michael told me that, and some of Greta's challenges, and in preparation for today, I indulged myself a little bit and went back into some of my early philosophy books to come to some better understanding of this community. And frankly, I think it's worked, but I can tell you that I'm not going to try and be a kindergarten student here and present any kind of a lecture about that belief spectrum. Other than, to start, for those of you who might be both atheists and mothers, I found a piece which I believe speaks to this group and to that particular group today. This is from a book called Parents Beyond Belief, An Atheist Mother's Promise, by a woman named Tessa Tinney. It's the response from a mother who happens to be an atheist to a questioner who happens to believe in God. The question is about how the mother can raise her sons without religion as her guide. Paraphrasing the mother, she responds, Faithful people seem to think that atheists are rudderless, listing with life's currents and without purpose. But atheists have a plan. We are atheists by a lot of thinking, reasoning, and choosing, and we will be parents with as much deliberateness and thought as conventionally religious people. She concluded, "Hereafter is my commitment to you," speaking to her sons, and I think that there's much wisdom here, to her sons. "I promise that by example, I will teach you kindness, justice, cooperation, respect, and tolerance, because morality is part of what it means to be a responsible member of society and of the world. I promise to help you see other people's perspectives, consider their experiences, and be tolerant of their differences. I'll encourage you to see beyond the labels of good and evil to understand the complexity of human existence. I promise that as you grow and as I get to know you, I'll accept you for who you are, rather than any preconceived notion of who you should be. I promise to teach you that an agent of change, I promise to teach you that you're an agent of change in your own life and in this world. You aren't a victim of circumstance, and you don't need to wait for unseen forces to bring you miracles. You're your own creator of fulfillment, joy, love, and peace. Alongside science, history, philosophy, and the arts, I promise to teach you about all religions and give you the intellectual freedom to wonder, question, and come to your own conclusions. And if your conclusions are different from mine, as many inevitably will be, I promise to respect them. I promise to tell you the truth as much as I know it, and encourage a lifetime of curiosity, questioning, and exploration in pursuit of more knowledge and your own truth. I promise to show you that this moment right here is all the heaven we need. This life is our gift and our purpose. It's our opportunity to live richly and to make lasting and meaningful change for society and humanity." Now that sounds pretty good, and that sounds pretty similar to some of what I have heard this morning. But in particular, it's a segue to what Michael asked me to talk about, volunteerism and giving back to society. It's what your administrator, Annie, sent me about your community here. West Hill is on a journey of faith, faith in the wonderful human potential to do good and be better. Or as the mother in her commitment to her sons said, "This life is our gift, our purpose. It's our opportunity to live richly and to make lasting and meaningful change for society and humanity." And as Prime Minister Trudeau said during National Volunteer Week, "Volunteers remind us that our commitment to support each other makes us who we are as a country." Now here, I can't resist a little dig at Donald Trump. During his campaign, he recruited volunteers for what he called Citizens for Trump. And this was the mantra: Citizens for Trump, to help coordinate, plan, and achieve measurable results and be a blessing to the Trump administration. A little narcissism, a little self-centered. By the way, those volunteers for Trump's campaign also had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and this is true. I mean, some of what we're seeing there is better than theater. They had to sign a non-disclosure agreement which prevented them from saying anything bad about Trump, his family, companies, or products for life. No, that's real news. So this morning, we'll talk about why volunteerism is necessary for the survival of humankind. I'll touch on why we need to give back, and why by doing so, as the mother said, is our opportunity to live richly. My wife Judy and I went to a movie the other evening called I, Daniel Blake. It is the story of a couple of really normal people. There is a 59-year-old carpenter who has had a heart attack and is basically forced by British authorities to find work, or at least to do everything possible to find work, before they will give him any social assistance. He dies of another heart attack before his social entitlement is confirmed. The other protagonist is a young single mother of two elementary school kids who is reduced to poverty, needs a food bank and unheated public housing to survive, and can't receive even those handouts if she is not working. So, with no apparent alternative and having two small children to care for and invisible despair, she begins working in a brothel just to be able to afford school clothes and shoes for her children. Now, I mention this society because our society is often cruel. I guess there are too many people and too few resources. Governments are all facing demands to do more with less, as we all are. Or are we? Are you living with less? Don't most of us live in a bigger house than we grew up in? And don't most of us have more and better food than our parents? Aren't most of us living longer? Most of us will answer yes to all of those questions. But what about the Daniel Blakes of the world? A cynical view would say they are collateral damage. In the late 80s, I practiced law in Los Angeles and lived in a community called Brentwood, which was near to the coast. It was an extraordinarily benign life. My house was in a eucalyptus grove, always fragrant and peaceful. My neighbors seemed radiant and healthy. Everyone jogged or played tennis or swam. Everyone except the thousands of street people, most of whom lived either in downtown LA, in the urban jungle, but near to their dealers, or in Santa Monica. Santa Monica was the end of the line, the end of the Greyhound bus line. You see, in 1981, President Ronald Reagan, as a fiscal restraint matter, fiddled federal health care, topical these days, closing hundreds of mental hospitals and facilities for indigents and pushing those poor souls into the streets of cities throughout America. Too many people and too few resources. What did the municipalities do with those folks? They bought them one-way bus tickets to as far as Greyhound ran to Santa Monica. When I was living out there, 10,000 people were on the streets of LA and Santa Monica. But then in 1988, there was a new president, the first George Bush, the smart one. His economy was no better than Reagan's, but he launched a program of volunteerism, 1,000 points of light. 1,000 points of light. It wasn't just government money fixing problems. As Bush said, if each person does something to help, the problems will be fewer. I saw it at work. To give those homeless people a roof, a bed, and a second chance, inspired, and by doing so, perhaps be one of the 1,000 points of light, a group of 18 of us, a mixture of people from the communities in and around Los Angeles, helped a home for the homeless called the Union Rescue Mission raise over $60 million in 6 weeks. huge tasks can be undertaken when the need is so big. The Union Rescue Mission was the backdrop of the film that many of you might have seen called The Soloist, about a character played by Jamie Foxx, the street-living, Juilliard-trained cellist Nathan Ayers. This was an early opportunity for me to make a lasting and meaningful change for society and in humanity. I was involved in other charities when I lived in LA, including cultural ones catering to the rich and famous, but none of those gave me the pleasure I received from volunteering for the Union Rescue Mission. A friend of mine here in Toronto, Marty Teplitsky, was a ferociously effective litigator and arbitrator. He was successful and had homes in Toronto, a home in the south in the sun. He ate and drank too well, and most of the times he had what many of us in this city of traffic would particularly like, a driver. Marty lived high, but Marty gave back. That's an almost overworked phrase, but Marty lived it. Marty was philanthropic, but he also gave of his time. In 1998, he launched a program in Toronto for the homeless. It was called Lawyers Feed the Hungry. Lawyers sometimes have a heart. Marty, many of his colleagues, and hundreds of volunteers, including my wife Judy, served hundreds of thousands of hot meals year-round in Toronto, Ottawa, Windsor, and London. There was no government money. It was just one guy who saw a need and rounded up a gang of volunteers. Marty died last year after a three-year battle with pancreatic cancer. While he was feted during his illness, none of his professional accomplishments, and there were many, was heralded as much as the Feed the Hungry program. And Marty told me nothing except his family and wife Nancy gave him greater satisfaction. As that mother said to her sons, in a way paraphrasing that, Marty lived richly and made a lasting and meaningful change. There are so many ways to give back and to become involved in communities. As I walk up University Avenue in Toronto, I am in awe of those names on hospital wings and on cultural centers. Those names belong to people who have been generous with their money. But behind each of those naming opportunities, there are thousands of people who give their time and energy. Think of the hospitals and the volunteers who drive patients for treatments, push them around in wheelchairs, staff the information desk, and work in the offices to help raise money and awareness. Then there are the directors on hospital boards and the hospital foundation boards. The hospital directors give hundreds of hours each year ensuring safety and excellence in those hospitals. The foundation directors are the money raisers, every year bridging the gap between what the government can support and what the health community needs. I was on the board of the Scarborough Hospital for a couple of years, and I must say it was my toughest job until that time in my career. And contrary to rumors, hospital directors in this province all volunteer. There's no payment. In Scarborough, we led an amalgamation among Scarborough General, Birchmount, and Rouge Valley. That just happened last year. The three hospital organization will bring more efficiency, better health care to this community where we are this morning. It will be the foundation of a new mega hospital for Scarborough, providing a lasting and meaningful contribution to the community. Straddling both sides of University Avenue is the University of Toronto and its undergraduate colleges and community schools. As many of you in this room, Michael, Louise, and I attended U of T, and I know our education, yours, and the learning of the youth in this city and country would have been far less fulfilling had it not been for the thousands of volunteers, from governors to fundraisers, who assisted that university. The Royal Ontario Museum and the Gardner Museum are also on my walk on university. Think about those institutions and the hundreds of docents and other volunteers without whose commitments those organizations would close, and without whose knowledge I might not be able to find the washrooms. The legislature at Queen's Park symbolizes what is good and less good in our society. I'll focus on the provincial government. On one hand, it takes our taxes and provides the bulk of services which touch us daily. On the other, many citizens believe government should do it all. How many of you have heard seemingly intelligent people say they shouldn't have to contribute to a hospital capital campaign because the government should pay for it, but then complain about old buildings and poor equipment or long lines? Simply, as I said earlier, there are too many people and not enough money. I suppose government could tax more, but then we would complain again about that. What we have at Queen's Park is a government which encourages volunteerism because it must. Queen's Park also reminds us of our civic duty living in this best democracy. The thousands who volunteer for political parties and candidates so our government will be truly representative. I've listed these institutions to remind us of the scope of the need. Politics, government, health, education, the environment, and culture. In a way, that can be a menu for sectors in which each of you probably already gives back. As Michael said, a year ago I became chair of the Canadian Cancer Society. CCS is the biggest health charity in Canada. In fact, it's huge. It's the largest non-governmental underwriter of cancer research, $35 to $40 million a year. It's the biggest advocate against cancer-causing behavior. By far the most available, 24 hours a day, dispenser of advice, encouragement, and consolation to people with the diseases. We are the operator of most camps for children with or recovering from cancer and their families. We transport more people to their chemo and other treatments than anyone else, about 40,000 rides a year. We have the most wig libraries, lending wigs to patients who have lost their hair during chemo. And we operate lodges where people can stay between treatments, a service which is many times larger even than Ronald McDonald House. And we do this all mainly through donations, and mainly relatively small ones, from selling daffodils in April, operating events like the Relay for Life, and now following our amalgamation in February with the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation, the Run for the Cure. Yes, we still have a few of the lotteries, and we do hold a couple of galas a year. But we're branching out into other areas where Canadians are active and where we have discovered interest, like bike teams. Last week, now we're on a pancreatic cancer kick here, last week for the first time, the Canadian Cancer Society sponsored a number of rides around the lake. It was called 7 Days in May, that's around Lake Ontario, raising money for pancreatic cancer research. And Michael and I have been on a bike team for years, helped by Louise, who has driven a support vehicle for 5 years, and Judy, who donates time and money as well. CCS has a big staff in many community service offices right across the country. But did you know we have more than 150,000 volunteers? That's about the size of the populations of Kingston or Sudbury. And don't for a minute think our volunteers comprise mainly people selling daffodils, although in April we see lots of them. Yes, there are thousands, but on our boards and committees we have doctors, researchers, accountants, lawyers, professors, school teachers, social workers, salesmen, train conductors, and dozens of others. Tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, they're all there. And by the numbers, each volunteer represents about $1,000 in revenue for CCS. That doesn't mean they're all bringing $1,000 in, that's just what it averages out to. And each saves us an average of about $2,000 against what we would have to pay if their contributions were paid employment. Volunteers are the soul and the heart of CCS. Like all organizations, CCS has its critics, donors always asking why we haven't cured cancer yet. Oh, I'm not going to contribute to them anymore because they haven't found the cure. Also, as Michael said, CCS was top-heavy. It used to be a big bureaucracy where our workers followed very strict procedures. We were too big and we were criticized for not being efficient with donor dollars. But we've changed that up in a year. We're now 30% fewer employees and community offices. And you know what? Our morale is higher and our deliverables to communities better. And with a more agile CCS, we are about to launch new services in new directions. We're working on opening a cancer prevention and survivorship center in Vancouver. It is expected to identify ways of avoiding contracting cancer, especially for those who have genetic predispositions, and protocols to help survivors live longer and more fulfilling lives, as many cancers can be contained and controlled and are becoming chronic diseases. I always measure job satisfaction by whether I want to do something else, or as Michael introduced me, to whether I want to move to another city. I normally change jobs or careers with each of those moves, most voluntarily. But unless I'm satisfied, I move. I expect I'll stay at CCS for quite a while because I know along with those other 150,000 volunteers, we are all finding opportunities to live richly and to make lasting and meaningful change for society and humanity. Scotland has the only nationally run office which promotes and helps organizing volunteering. It's called Volunteer Scotland. Its website, masthead, says, "By giving your time, you're helping the organization you volunteer for, and you're also helping the people, communities, animals, or environment they represent." What turns that donation into an investment is that you get back far more than you give. And for whatever you want to get out of volunteering, there is an opportunity that can help realize it. The website goes on to give its equivalent of David Letterman's top 10 list of the benefits individual volunteers receive, stopping at 7. Scots, you know. Gain confidence. These are what you can get. Gain confidence by giving you the chance to try something new and build a real sense of achievement. Make a difference. Have a real and valuable positive effect on people, communities, and society in general. Meet people, different kinds of people, and make new friends. Be part of a community. Feel part of something outside your friends and family. Learn new skills. Gain experience, and sometimes even qualifications. Take on a challenge. Challenge yourself to try something different. Achieve personal goals. Practice using your skills and discover hidden talents. And my personal favorite, have fun. Have a great time, regardless of why you're doing it. I'll close with a couple of quotes from Mahatma Gandhi. The way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. And the next one, simpler, the future depends on what you do today. Thank you. It's been a privilege to be here this morning, and I've enjoyed this community. Thank you. Thank you. Robert? Rob?
Well, on your behalf, I want to thank Robert. I was negligent in not recognizing his wife, Judy. Robert and Judy, between them, have 4 children and 5 grandchildren, and so they'll be celebrating with their families. Robert certainly indicated that we do have a competition between the two of us, but I think we brag and boast of each other's accomplishments. And I am so proud of what my brother has done and accomplished, and that he would come and share with us this morning. As a token, I am going to give him a little bit of West Hill back. And Robert, these are made by John DePeaty of pews that have been recommissioned, and you have an opportunity to let your light shine in another way by enjoying these things. We will ask that you stay around, if you could, for a few moments and chat. I hope that you have some questions and comments for Robert. But as we conclude, as we normally do, we do have our closing song, and we have what we would call a benediction. And I will just say, go into the world, let your light shine, live with courage, and look for West Hill moments. Until we meet again.
Our lives we now center on all that is good, on all that we know is worthy. So we may nurture each other with the richness of truth, restoring our soul.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.